Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time. Dig out the truth written between the lines. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining us today for Her Story number 50 is educator and museum professional Stacy Klingler. Stacy holds a BA in psychology from Gonzaga University and an MA in development psychology from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Currently, Stacy is assistant director of local history services at the Indiana Historical Society and serves as the chair of the AASLH Small Museums Committee and is a member of the Field Services Alliance. Before working at the Indiana Historical Society, she also served as board treasurer for the Association of Indiana Museums and the director of the Putnam County Museum. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And who have you chosen to share with us today?
I picked Dr. Maria Montessori. Kind of decided to do her because she's a brand name, I think, that people recognize. Maybe they've heard of a Montessori school, but she's not really known. And if folks do know her, and if they've experienced a Montessori school, then they might think of her as somebody who created this world that's really, really structured, that nobody's allowed to play in Montessori school, or they think of Montessori schools being these free-for-alls where there's no directions from teachers. I think there's just a lot of misperceptions about her. So I thought I would do my best to try to correct those a little bit. I really like Maria Montessori as someone who revolutionized the way we think about how children learn without us knowing it. When she was born in 1870 to sort of a well-to-do family, an Italian gentleman but a well-educated mother, education was really about kids sitting in rows and learning their lessons by rote, just kind of repeating and repeating after the teacher. And that was an education system that was created to teach large groups of illiterate people with, you know, not very many resources, just a couple teachers. And Montessori really wanted to free children from these sort of physical and mental restraints that we put on them, this idea of being in rows and being set in seats and repeating, sort of being passive sponges who are supposed to absorb this information, who are really dependent on teachers, and to help them be active and independent individuals and learners. And so I wanted to be known for that, not for, you know, being a dogmatic, strange educational system.
Well, please tell us all a little bit about Maria Montessori.
Well, when I think about kind of women's history, I think there's sort of archetypal stories that happen, and Montessori's is really similar to a lot of people we think about as sort of famous women. She was a smart girl. With the support of her mother, she fought for entry into medical school and became the first female doctor in Italy at the age of 26. So she was sort of that founder, this breaker of boundaries. And she was able to do that in large part because she came from an upper-class family, and education was important to the family, and that was really key to her success. And like a lot of women in that time period, right around the turn of the century, she was an advocate for women's rights, and she ended up making a big splash as the Italian delegate at the International Women's Conference in Berlin. And she was sort of known not for being sort of your typical feminist, but for being, you know, charming and beautiful and well-spoken and not being tough, but for being very feminine, but still advocating for women's rights. And she made a place for herself ultimately thinking about education of children and working with children, which is sort of a traditional area in which we see women having an influence. but that's really not what she wanted to be. She picked medical school because she didn't want to become a teacher. You know, what if you were an educated woman, about the only thing you could do was become a teacher. And so she went off and I'm going to do medicine, kind of break those boundaries. But she ended up coming back to working with children because one of her goals was to really to reform society, as was, you know, sort of going on at the time. And she really decided that the best way to do that was by educating children. So as she was pursuing her medical studies, she got to visit insane asylums in Rome, looking for people to treat. And she kind of happened upon rooms in these asylums that were for what they called at the time feeble-minded children, or sort of developmentally delayed children who were in asylums because there was no place for them. There was no educational system that would take care of them, and parents were overwhelmed. And she talks about going to an asylum and seeing this room where kids were kept like prisoners, and all they did was stare at the walls and sleep and eat. And the caretaker told Dr. Montessori, oh, they're just so disgusting. You know, after they eat, they throw themselves on the floor and they just grab for the dirty crumbs of bread. And she sort of looked at these kids and thought, you know, they're starved for experience. They have nothing to play with. They have no one to talk to other than each other, no sort of stimulation. And so they found the only toys they could, which were breadcrumbs, to relieve their boredom. And she really thought, what could we be doing with these kids? Maybe they're really seeking experience, and so we could offer them experience, and maybe they would do better. They shouldn't be in these insane asylums. So she spent kind of the year after she became a doctor, you know, she was working and treating patients, but also studied educational theory in her own time, and kind of looked at different educators who had worked with developmentally delayed kids in France. And then she studied Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who was really advocating for learning from nature and, you know, not sort of the rote kind of education that she experienced and other people were experiencing at the time, and other people who then followed Rousseau, who were really focusing on education through sensation and learning through the senses, touch and taste and smell, and folks who were looking at learning through play, and sort of the kindergarten movement. And so she really got in her head that she could make a difference by advocating for these kids to move out of the asylum and get real education. And in Italy, it was just the perfect time to work for change. So, you know, kind of like the United States at the time, there was all sorts of movements to better society and to make the world a better place. And so she traveled Italy and used her persuasive speaking that she was known for to advocate for essentially special education. And just 3 years after completing medical school, she, in addition to all of her medical duties, was appointed director of a demonstration school that was going to be there to train women teachers about how to better teach developmentally delayed children. And she spent her time over the next year or two developing materials, things people could use, these kids could use, based on sensation that would help them learn about the world. So she created sets of colors, so different gradations of color, so they could learn light to dark. She created different gradations of size of blocks, and so they could line them up and see, you know, big to small. And so these kind of basic concepts, she found concrete materials, sensory materials that would help teach those ideas. So she was just becoming known far and wide throughout Italy, and had really kind of made a big splash, sort of a second celebrity splash. Her first was at the Women's Rights Conference that she attended in Berlin. But here then, just after 2 years of working on this, she announced that she was going to resign from her medical practice, resign from teaching at this demonstration school to study psychology and educational theory to see if what she had learned about developmentally delayed children could be applied to normal kids. And she did this publicly and really removed herself from the public eye, and it turns out that probably during this time she had an illegitimate son. And so we know that she did have an illegitimate son. It's just not sure clear that this is when he was born, but since she was out of the public eye, it seems most likely. And the the father of her child was her co-director at the school, and he ended up getting married to somebody else, and she was sort of heartbroken, and her son had to be fostered out in the country. She wasn't able to raise him because of the stir that would cause. She just wouldn't be able to be out in public, particularly in a Catholic country like Italy. And so she studied more, and she really ended up devoting her life to better educating all children when she really wasn't able to care for her own, which I think is, as a mother, I find that a really kind of tragic moment. So she ended up coming back into the public eye a couple years later and teaching at the university, teaching what she had learned about sort of physical anthropology, so about measurements of the head and, you know, the sort of world that believed that, you know, the size of your head and the bumps on your head might tell you something about who you were. But this sort of brought her back into the public eye and gave her, because she was now a new opportunity. So in 1906, and she's 36 years old at the time, had sort of already had one big career as a doctor and then is sort of coming back as an educator. She was given this opportunity from kind of an urban renewal movement in Rome to test her ideas about her sort of learning theory with normal kids. So in Rome, there had been this big building boom and then bust. And so there were all these half-completed buildings that were filled up with squatters. And the real estate association decided they were going to clean up this section of town and pull out the squatters and, you know, make the buildings nicer. But really for lower class families who were employed, but much smaller apartments. And they did this, and they had the families move in, and that worked well. But they found that because both of the parents were working, there were these kids from about, you know, ages 2 to 6 who weren't in school yet, who would basically be free to wander the halls and would draw on the walls and make a mess. And they decided that the least expensive way of taking care of this problem was to provide a day nursery for women. And so they decided they'd hire one woman to watch 50 kids. And I have to say, that's got to be a brave woman who would do that. Going to provide for the woman to watch the kids in the space, but they invited Dr. Montessori to be the director of the nursery to sort of figure out how it was going to be run. And she thought that this would be an interesting place to kind of test out her ideas to see if, you know, she really could work with younger kids to learn. Because basically, at this time in Italy, people thought, you know, before the age of 6, there's no point in you being in school. You can't focus. You can't sit still. You won't be able to learn anything. So you just kind of let kids off to play, and that was what they did. So she decided she could kind of try out her grand social experiment and see what younger children could learn. And so she had wealthy friends, and she solicited them for some toys and some child-sized furniture and to recreate some of the materials she had designed for the special education students several years before, and basically put them in the room with this woman who'd been hired to teach or oversee them or watch them. And she just asked, you know, the teacher not to interfere, really, just to wanted to watch what the children did. And she was fascinated because she found that once the kids kind of got over the fear of being in this new place, they started exploring, and they were a lot less interested in the toys than they were in the sort of materials that she had created for the developmentally delayed kids. They were exploring them and using them and focused on them and concentrating. She tells a great story about a little girl who was putting cylinders into holes, basically pegs into holes, different sizes from small to large. And this girl was so focused, she just kept doing it over and over again. And Maria Montessori was really interested. So how focused could she be? So she asked the teachers to get some of the kids together to sing and make a lot of noise. And this little girl, she was just really focused, and she kept putting the pegs in the holes and taking them out. And at one point, Maria Montessori even lifted the girl up in her chair and put her on top of the table, and the little girl just grabbed onto the cylinders and held onto them and just kept putting them in and out. And the amount of time that Maria Montessori spent watching her, the little girl did it 42 times. And, you know, if you can imagine a three-year-old this focused on an activity, it kind of blows the mind. But the girl had chosen this activity, and she was fascinated by it, and it seemed to give her a sense of understanding of the world. And so her social experiment she thought was going quite well, but the kids were pretty much fairly orderly and they would pick activities to do and follow their own interests. She eventually included some new kinds of activities like caring for plants and preparing and serving lunch, sort of practical life activities in addition to sort of these concept-based activities. And the kids were just flourishing and people started hearing about it. And the kids eventually asked her to teach them to read and write. They wanted to learn about letters. And so she created these letters made from sandpaper. So she's really focused on this idea that you learn through your senses. So if you could trace the sandpaper letters, the rough letters, you would learn the motions you need to do to make letters. And so kids traced the letters and basically learned to write just by tracing. And eventually this allowed them to recognize the letters and the words, and you know, she was finding she had four-year-olds who were learning how to read. And this was a miracle, essentially. You know, kids who were 6 and 7 were sitting in school drawing lines to get control of their hands and have the right slant for writing. And here were these little teeny kids who were learning how to write. And this just got out far and wide. People came to observe and wanted to see these polite, well-behaved kids who, you know, interacted with each other without much direction from teachers. And people were amazed. It just was considered a miracle. So in addition to people coming just to watch, to see this kind of strange place, there were young women teachers who came to observe it and wanted to learn how to do it themselves. And more of these sort of schools within these apartment buildings were created. They were called children's houses or Casa di Bambini. And this became a movement. It spread. And people started hearing about it in other countries, and she started getting visits from England and from France and from Switzerland, people who didn't even speak English would come just to watch what was going on. And someone encouraged her to sort of write her method down, write her thoughts down, and so just 2 years after she opened the school, she wrote the Montessori method, which was sort of the basis of all her future work, and which was translated into all sorts of other languages and spread the Montessori method around the world. But it was that was both the good part and the bad part for her in the end. The next year, she was so invested in this method and how she thought it would change the world. She resigned from her teaching at the University of Rome. She removed her name from the list of practicing doctors to devote all her time to kind of spreading the word of this movement, so to training teachers, to creating materials, and to creating Montessori societies that would promote Montessori throughout the world. And because she quit her jobs, it became a commercial enterprise for her, and the sale of the materials and the teacher training were what kept her going. So having quit her jobs, having quit her sources of income, she was focused on spreading the word, and she traveled all over the world. The Montessori method became the official method of teaching in Italy and Switzerland, and schools were open in Paris and in England and in the United States, and stories began to appear in the mass media, sort of this miracle way of educating children. People just didn't think it was possible that young children could read or write. She was invited to come to the United States and offered a series of lectures in 1913 and 14 that just captured the world's attention. She actually had film of the kids doing the activities, and so she was able to show these silent movies where you could really kind of see the proof in the pudding that real children were doing these sorts of activities. The lecture series she came to give was set up by S.S. McClure, who had McClure's magazine, and you can actually find these original magazines online, and you can read the original articles that were published about her work. So he was promoting her, but she felt like she was losing control of the message, that people were talking about her method, but they weren't really understanding it, and she didn't want other people to write or to speak about it. And she had a falling out with McClure because she felt like he was trying to spread the word without her. She had visited the United States for a couple weeks giving this lecture series, but then he continued to speak and show the films around the country, and she was kind of upset about that. She came back to the United States in 1915 and came to the West Coast, spoke at the National Education Association in San Francisco, and then set up a model demonstration school at the Panama Pacific International Exposition. And they created this glass box schoolroom with kids in it, and then bleachers all around it for watching. I can't imagine going to watch preschool kids in their preschool class, but that's what people did for fun. And people really just were talking far and wide about her method. But she's kind of out of line with what folks were talking about in the United States about education. People were impressed with this, but they didn't think the basis of her claims was very sound. And sort of the progressive education movement, the folks who were in charge of that, sort of carrying on John Dewey's idea about progressive education, basically panned her ideas and said they were based on outdated psychology and that the world had moved beyond that. And Maria Montessori never ended up coming back to the United States. And the Montessori movement sort of died out by 1918 here in the U.S. She traveled over the world and spread things to India, all over Europe, but never really had a foothold in the United States the way that she had at that point in time. And she died in 1952, and that even though she didn't have, during her lifetime, a huge impact on education in the United States, we do feel the impact of her today. She was sort of rediscovered in the 60s and 70s, and new Montessori training happened in the United States, and a lot of her ideas about children and about how education should happen have sort of seeped into how we do education today.
And why did you choose Maria Montessori as your inspirational woman in history?
Well, I picked Maria Montessori because I think I share with her the belief that every child and really every person is desperate to learn. If only we can figure out what is the thing that fascinates us or the way to teach us. I think we are, as a society, in a sad place when folks are more fascinated just by watching things on television than by learning about something. I think we crush curiosity in public school. And so her philosophy of children and of education is what I find fascinating about her. And I, full disclosure, I am a product of Montessori education. My mother is a Montessori teacher. But until I kind of sat down and read her biography for this, I didn't realize how much of what I fundamentally believe about people kind of comes from her philosophy. You know, I'm definitely interested in education today and education reform today, and I think we have a lot to learn from her, and I'm just kind of would like to see her ideas resurface. I'm also really inspired by kind of her dedication and her confidence and the way in which she kind of delved in and educated herself about psychological theories and educational theory and medicine and brought a couple different lines of thinking together to really make a difference in the world. But I also found in looking at her life that she's really a cautionary tale, and I will take her as a cautionary tale as a leader. She's really charismatic and a great speaker, but she had to control everything. She surrounded herself with people who were essentially her disciples, who just hung on her every word and who would never question her. She didn't have colleagues. She just had folks who carried out what she did. She was really afraid to lose control of her materials and of her methods. And so she wasn't able to interact with the larger education movement. And I think that's part of what made her end up as kind of this isolated education system that only reaches a really small group of people now. And that, I think, is kind of her failure as a leader. And I like to imagine myself as somebody who will eventually lead people. And I want to take that message to heart. But I'm also sort of reassured by the fact that her ideas have survived and have eventually percolated and penetrated into the education world. That so despite the fact she sort of created this cult of personality around herself, the idea of self-directed learning is a part of how we see education. The idea that kids need to be actively engaged in learning and not just passive recipients of information is part of the way we think about education now. And my secret is that I'm not actually a historian. My background is in developmental psychology. And so part of my fascination with her is things I studied about babies and two-year-olds and three-year-olds in my previous life, and that this idea that learning happens from birth. And she was really devoted to that idea, and I like that has kind of permeated the world. And finally, she just recognized that the motivation to learn comes from within for people, that you feel pride in completing a task. And that's the motivation you want to encourage in people. You want to encourage people to be independent learners, not to learn because we told you to, but because it is fascinating and interesting and wonderful, and you feel such a sense of accomplishment when you do it. That's the kind of learning I want to see. And I'm involved in museums now because I think that museums have the possibility to be that kind of space for everyone, not just for children, but for adults, for all of us to be able to explore the world and be fascinated by things, and learn and know that learning is a wonderful thing. So I aspire to create a museum that is actually a Montessori school for adults and children. That's my goal in the end.
Sign me up, Stacy. I want to be on that staff. That sounds like an amazing museum.
We'll see.
And a book. What about a book? Do you have one that you would recommend so people can start learning more about Maria Montessori?
I would definitely recommend Maria Montessori. It's a biography by Rita Kramer. That I think gives a great outline of her life. I would also encourage folks, if they kind of want to get the sort of more historical flavor, to look up McClure's magazine. You can find it on the Hathaway Trust. It's a digital library that's a consortium of colleges and universities. And the first article appeared in May of 1911. And so you can kind of read about it and see the pictures that were the first ones that came to the United States and really spread the word of her movement.
Well, there you have it from Maria Montessori. Stacy, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
Here to tell a story, something precious and fine, about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few, her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.